Welcome to you. It's great to have your company.
Well, my guest today, Michael Anderson,
the former member of the original, the last remaining member also of the original four that established the Aboriginal Embassy on the lawns of Parliament House. It became known as the Tent Embassy, but in fact it was the Aboriginal Embassy. Michael, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm very well, Peter.
Tell us your mob, your country.
My mother's country and people are the Yuwalyai. And, of course, my dad is the Gomeroi people, and both these nations sit next to each other, way out in central northwest New South Wales, right on the border of Queensland, and, in fact, they overlap into Queensland.
All right.
So, them Whitefella, they weren't able to draw circles and arcs. They drew straight lines, and
straight
they cut
lines.
Our mob in half.
That's it, straight lines, yes. That's what the borders have done, the bound, their borders.
That's what they did.
Now, you recently were involved in a meeting in Brisbane discussing the sovereignty issue. How was it? It was a 2-day meeting held at the Murray School.
Yeah, it was a wonderful meeting. In fact, it was quite a joy to go to a meeting. Not about ideologies and the differences, and not about approaches. And process, it was just about a learning thing, and that's what people wanted to know, and that's what they got. And it was such a refreshing way of dealing with the issues.
I saw that old man, Uncle Kevin Buzzacott, that Arabunna man, present. My dear, it's fantastic to see him still being able to travel, for one, and attend meetings such as this.
Well, you know, like Kevin and I go back a long way. Both ceremonial as well as, you know, political. And he's a man from Lake Eyre and Arabunna mob. And, of course, their custom and law is very much akin to ours because we got big storylines that connect us right across them fellas. And, and Kevin, with all his ill health of the past 8 years, I know, sort of prevented him from moving around, and now he's sort of like a little jumping rabbit again, little fellow who's toddling around and sort of being excited about what he's learning and all the new things that we've found out over the last, 35 years and being able to now bring it all together. But his only complaint was that he said, I thought this Brisbane and Queensland were a warm country. He said, this is very cold, and unfortunately probably struck Brisbane at one of the coldest moments in their history.
That'll follow. Now, it was really good to see him. And you had other well-known advocates, First Nations people Skyping in as well as being present.
Yeah, well, you know, like they Skyped in Michael Mansell and others from around the country. They also Skyped in some New Zealand people who are always arguing that, you know, their mob were never signatories to the Treaty of Waitangi, but despite the fact that they were never signatories to the Treaty of Waitangi, it does in fact establish certain rights for them and obligations for government to adhere to Maori calls and Maoriism, or Maoridom as they say, which establishes rights and obligations on the part of the government towards those people. So, you know, I've found similarities here in Australia, and of course there, in respect to Canadian Indians, we have a similar situation as the Maoris, and the obligations were created by certain statutes and proclamations, and of course the people in Australia don't realise and don't want to accept the fact that there was something here established similar. And that's one that we're sort of investigating now through the full, true legal sense of the word.
That Māori experience, you're saying you engage with people who say they did not sign, they weren't signatories to the treaty, yet I think you said they're also receiving the benefits of the treaty regardless of being signatories. Is that what you said? And is
that's
that
correct.
The case over here? If there is a treaty agreement, and then there's conflicting views on treaty, and a lot of the times it's the Treaty of Waitangi that is often cited as not being a very good treaty, being interpreted in different ways, and often to the benefit of the colonial system. So is that what you're saying? Even though they didn't sign, they still enjoy, I suppose, for want of a better word, but they are still, they're still under the treaty, under the benefits of the treaty, if that's the right word.
Yeah, they are. In fact, their rights are preserved and protected under that. It's offered to all Maori throughout New Zealand. And similarly, here in our particular case, where, you know, a lot of lawyers have been looking at, you know, the orders in council that form part of the recognition of Aboriginal people's dominion and sovereignty over their own territories in Australia under the 1875 Pacific Islanders Protection Act. Now, everybody seems to think and like to argue that no, it doesn't apply to arms issued and brought those that treaty and that order into operation here in common law now, which we need to look at very closely.
And you're saying that's been taken from the native title legislation, the Mabo legislation here in this country?
Yeah, what they've done is that they've used, in subsequent cases, they use that because that establishes the treaty process, an order by the king, and how to deal with Indigenous people's rights. Now, a lot of people would like to say that that only relates to Canada, but now that Canada uses that and has found and held that there are rights that derive from that in relation to restricting government and their operations and dealing with Aboriginal people, their rights and their land. And because it's now brought into modern-day court considerations and it's founded based on that proclamation that there are treaty rights established and there are legal obligations, and the courts are now saying that the Indian rights come from that and that it's held in common law to be the case in the Supreme Court of Canada. Well, then that brings that proclamation into common law within our jurisdiction. And, of course, therein lies a new set of rights, legal rights, that have to be adhered to by the court.
So this is shedding new light on the Mabo legislation or on different aspects of native title in this country.
Well, it's broadened Mabo.
Right.
In fact, one of the criticisms that Nugget Coombs had about the Mabo case was that it failed to deal with other sort of rights and obligations, and particularly fiduciary obligations, you know, from the Crown and subsequent Australian governments who have inherited the obligations on the part of the Crown through their governance. And, of course, Nugget Coombs were very critical of the way in which the court dealt with issues. But the Mabo High Court sort of, to their defence, argue that these questions of rights, other rights, never came up in the court case. So, therefore, they had no, you know, compulsion to deal with those rights and to, you know, to declare those rights one way or the other. So that's why they left them out. But nonetheless, these subsequent court cases in 1995, 1997 in Canada have now advanced those rights. And, of course, Canada uses our common law. Canada is a common law country, and therefore all those decisions are to be imported into our considerations here in Australia. I was just going to say that one of those particular rights that they advanced in those court cases in Canada in 1997-1995, they argue there that that Aboriginal rights survive sovereignty, that is British sovereignty, and as a consequence of surviving British sovereignty, that establishes our territorial rights and our sovereign rights as a people, and therefore, and it comes back to the Canadian thing and the Maori situation where the government have no other pathway other than to be obligated to negotiate with us.
When do you think then that might be argued or taken up by our people in any of the native title issues?
Well, this is one of the things that we're doing now is there is some legal advice being sought now in relation to native title rights and interests. In fact, there's a complete investigation going on, and I can say this to you by the air. We are looking at now taking a class action against all lawyers who have proceeded, not only lawyers but also anthropologists, who have been dealing with Aboriginal evidence in relation to native title issues because they have failed in their fiduciary obligations and their due diligence to advise Aboriginal people of their true rights. And they've been failing to do that because a lot of the anthropologists have simply been advising Aboriginal people that you've got to draw, you've got to be able to, and we use certain stones and for tools, we use certain ochres for paint. We dig out dales, what we call grinding stones, for people to grind their food. And all of these things go to native title. Now, which means that, as it's been held now in a court case in Canada, that Aboriginal property rights, under their rights, which is what Mabo establishes, they have Aboriginal people's continuing sovereignty rights that includes what they call usufructuary rights. That is, we make use of all those things. That's a native title right and interest. And the anthropologists and lawyers are not advising our people that those trees, plants and animals have an extreme value to us as Aboriginal people under our law and custom. And they failed due diligence and their judicial obligation to advise our people of that and to include those things in it. So that means that there should never be one tree, one blade of grass cleared until native title is determined over country, because that's our law and custom, and we are connected to it through our law and custom by way of totemism.
Well, Michael, all I can say is it is very welcome news that these people are brought to account, because they have been used by governments and mining companies and pastoralists and others for far too long to go in and write up reports that come out in favour of the system, of the pastoralists, of governments, of mining companies. They've been used for far too long, and it's time they were brought to account. It's way overdue. So it's very welcome news.
Well, I can assure you that we will be bringing them to account because they have, in fact, misled our people. They have forced our people to give this a run because they have, in fact, been negligent in their fiduciary obligations to our people.
More than bloody negligent, mate. They've been bloody well contemptuous towards our mob.
The Gomeroi people at their recent meeting, the Gomeroi, there are about 400 people there. They passed a resolution to now seek legal advice in respect to the fact that we have a registered native title claim over our country, and we have now a minister, subsequent to this, issuing both state and federal ministers, Commonwealth and state, issuing licenses to mine, to clear land, and to culturally to also include removal of our artefacts and cutting down of our scar trees for the purpose of so-called allegedly protecting them for the future and removing them off the country. Now, while there's a registered native title claim going on, the minister doesn't have those powers. He loses powers to do that because, you see, his approval are predicated on the basis that there's no native title, doesn't exist. And so he's not the judge in this case. And these ministers are not the judges. And so what's happening is that when you look at it from that angle, then we have to prove our cultural connection according to our law and custom. Then if the ministers are proving those things to be destroyed and removed, well, then basically what's happening is that if we don't fight it, then we're allowing our culture to be destroyed. And, of course, that then gives the state the authority to say, well, you Aboriginal people are not interested in your culture because you're signing agreements and you're removing your culture and putting them into museums. So your culture to your land and connection is now restricted to a museum where all your culture is being removed.
Yes, and yeah.
And that brings in the Yorta Yorta case, Olney's position, where our people have let their culture go. So be very careful. That's what I'm saying. Do not take the advice off your lawyers because your lawyers are misleading you in favour of government development and mining.
Yes, even though they're being paid to represent and speak for our mob, our people, they're in there representing the interests of the system, really. They're being, in a lot of cases, they're being two-faced and treating us with contempt, and it's happened for far too long.
We've got to do something about that.
Most certainly. Let's take a break.
I must go. I'm in a court proceeding.
Okay.
Let's talk about that at another time, mate.
Yeah, for sure. No worries, Michael. Thank you very much.
My friend, thank you very much, and I hope we get to talk again soon.
We will. You have a good day.
Good on you, mate. Thank you. Bye now. Bye.
Michael Anderson talking to us quickly before going into court, yet another court case.